I am very grateful to be with all of you this evening. Thank you for being here. Bhaktivinod Thakur has written that the difficulties he endures in his service to the Lord, for the pleasure of the Lord, is his greatest happiness. Material life is when we put the flickering pleasures and securities of the mind and the senses in the center of our lives. Our decisions, our aspirations, our goals are according. Spiritual life, or true bhakti, is when we put the pleasure of God or Krishna in the center of our life. What pleases Krishna? All of our decisions, our aspirations, are orchestrated accordingly. Of course, we have bodies, we have minds, and they are gifts of Krishna. So for Krishna's pleasure, we should keep our gifts in, as far as possible, good conditions. But for the purpose of being instruments of service. Here in Udupi, Sripad Madhvacharya he taught the path of bhakti in a way that was revolutionary at the time. Because even people who were sincere were so much affected by impersonalistic philosophical arguments. They were so all-pervading that the general population and even the scholars were very confused. He taught that the jiva, the individual soul, is an eternal servant of the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. And the constitutional nature of the Atma is seva, or service, to serve with love. That the Absolute Truth, Narayan, Krishna, his body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The Srimad Bhagavatam, in one particular verse, it explains so many mysteries that people fight about, argue about, and are confused about in regard to the nature of God. Vadanti tat tatpavidas tatvam yajgana madvayam brahmaiti paramatmaiti bhagavan iti shatyate. That learned transcendentalists they understand that there's one absolute truth. And that one absolute truth eternally has three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The all-pervading energy, Brahman, which is like a light that is everywhere within and outside of everything that exists, both material and spiritual worlds. Paramatma, the Lord who personally, out of love for all of his children, appears in the heart of every living being. And Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate object of everyone's love, who is supremely lovable, who performs pastimes forever in the spiritual world, and those pastimes inconceivably include every living being. Just like in this little yatra of ours, I was told there's about 4,500 people gathered together in this little tent. And when we want to go to holy places, we have to divide up in so many groups because so many buses and so many crowds and so much traffic. And when you want darshan, you have to stand in line. And sometimes for prasad, you have to stand in line. So some inconvenience. In the spiritual world, Krishna, the supreme lover, nobody has to stand in line. There are limitless devotees, literally countless devotees, 4,500, 10,000, 100,000, million thousand, million million, billion trillion, quadrillion, quadrillions, nothing, that's just a drop. Limitless devotees in this spiritual world, in so many forms. And each one is unique. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. We are all one, in the sense we are all of the same substance. We're all part of Krishna. Mamaivam so jiva loket. Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Eternally we are part of Krishna. We are Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. Krishna is the reservoir of all love, and being qualitatively part of Krishna, our eternal natural substance is to love, to serve. But quantitatively, Krishna is the complete whole and we are the parts. Krishna is the supreme master and we are the eternal servants. Now in the material world, to be a servant is considered a lesser position. Vrindavan Das Thakur, he gives us a beautiful insight into this idea. He explains how higher than being a president, prime minister, king, higher than attaining all the eight mystic siddhis of the yogis that takes hundreds, sometimes thousands of births to achieve, higher than elevation to the heavenly worlds where there's such a long life of health and beauty and the most inconceivable ways to enjoy, higher than even liberation is to actually receive the title Das, servant of the Lord. Because none of those other positions could actually satisfy the heart, the soul, because they're unnatural. They're actually foreign to our nature. Because the nature of the soul, anandamayo vyashat, it's seeking eternal happiness. And all of these things have beginning and end, and all are limited. But in the true sense, service is an expression of love. It is the highest thing we could receive. And therefore we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharata, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the lives of so many historical saints, it's the only thing they pray for is to serve with love. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari babathat bhakti rohoitakit. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered this prayer. And in doing so, set the standard of what we should be praying for, striving for in our life. My Lord, you can bestow upon me anything. I don't want wealth, power, fame of being a great scholar. I don't want followers. I don't want the optimum sensual pleasures. Not even liberation. I only want to serve you birth after birth after birth. Unconditionally. Anyabilashita sunyam jnana karmanya nabhita anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutam. Lord Chaitanya, he personally wrote these 8 shikshastakam verses, and he spoke so many deep instructions to his followers. He especially requested Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami to extract the very essence of all the knowledge of all the Vedas, pure devotional service to Sri Sri Radha Krishna in Vrindavan, and write books. And the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes in great detail what is the ultimate goal and how to achieve it. And he begins with this verse, that true devotion, bhakti, real love, is untainted by any desires for material acquisition, even mystic powers or liberation. Samsidhyar haritoshanam. Its object is simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam explains it in such a simple way that when you water the root of the tree, that water naturally extends to nourish every part of the tree. Janmadyashayataha, the absolute truth, who has many names, whose all attractive form is Krishna, is the root of all existence, from whom everything and everyone emanates. When we offer our love, our service to Krishna, it naturally extends everywhere. Universal love, in this sense, is natural for the soul. When we love Krishna, we see everything in relation to Krishna. And naturally, our love for Krishna extends accordingly. A few days ago in Kishkindha Kshetra, we celebrated Govardhan Puja. where the Vrijabhasis, according to their tradition, they were following practices that are very much recommended in authorized scriptures. To honor Indra, the deva who supplies water. Because when we receive, we should understand that we are depending on a higher power. We should be grateful and we should reciprocate. But when you water the root of the tree, when you satisfy Krishna, every single demigod is fully satisfied. Because they are all like the flowers and the fruits of the tree of Krishna. And our mothers and our fathers and our grandparents and great-grandparents and all of our forefathers and ancestors and everyone, we offer the highest love to all of them and to every living being. Because whatever they have and whoever they are always parts of Krishna. And to love Krishna is not just something theoretical, it's something very practical. In the spiritual world, all the limitless living beings who are in their pure spiritual forms, they are all feeling Krishna's personal, intimate presence. Time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world. But for our calculation, 24 hours a day for all of eternity. In other words, at all times, no one has to stand in line to meet Krishna. When Krishna was sitting on the bank of Yamuna with the cowherd boys, there were limitless cowherd boys. And each and every one of them was thinking, Krishna's only looking at me. Not just for a moment. The whole afternoon they were thinking like that. And they were all right, because Krishna was looking at all of them. Now, how is that possible? He only has one head, and he only has two eyes. But this is his Achintya Swarup, inconceivable form. With his two eyes, he could see all living beings everywhere in all spiritual and material worlds. And Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, when our eyes are decorated with love, then we can see Krishna. And we know that Krishna is always with us. So Madhvacharya, here in Udupi, he wanted to establish this principle that we have a personal relationship with Krishna and love is forever. But the predominating philosophy is whatever yoga you may perform, ultimately it's meant to bring you to overcome the false ego. And when there's no more false ego, you realize everything of this world is an illusion. And you become God. Aham Brahmasmi. The actual teaching, Aham Brahmasmi, means I'm part of God. I'm of the same substance of God. And I could be godly if I make that connection. But to become God, Srila Prabhupada he would say, how do you become God? God is always God. Well, I've always been God, but I just forgot. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. Arjuna, when he sees Krishna, he says, you are the supreme Brahman. You are the supreme abode. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. I'm the controller of material existence. Tumi sarveshwarishwar. I'm the controller of all controllers. God doesn't forget. God is never under the influence of Maya. And sometimes in Krishna's pastimes, when it appears that he forgets, sometimes it appears he forgets he's God. When Mother Yashoda picks up stick and says, Krishna, why did you steal this butter? And Krishna's crying and he's saying, no, I didn't steal it. She said, I saw you steal it. He said, okay, I stole it, but please put down your stick. Is he pretending? He's overcome with her love so much that in order to increase her love as a mother and his love, the intimacy, he's stepping aside from his role as the supreme to actually be the child of Yashoda. But that's ecstatic. That's anandaras. That's the highest ecstasy beyond liberation, beyond Vaikuntha. But the forgetfulness we have in this world, it's not under our control. It's not defined by love. It's the cause of suffering. And it induces us to do so many things that are regrettable. So the absolute truth never comes under such a spell. It's not a lila. Being in Maya is not a lila. Krishna's in lila. And Krishna's inviting us into a lila. And the material creation is part of Krishna's lila. And we are in it. But we don't realize it. We've forgotten it. So we never can forget. Srila Prabhupada explains it in such simple way. He says the jiva is the tatashta shakti. It's always has the choice between material and spiritual energy. We're always subordinate to the beauty, the grace, and the love of God. And if we reciprocate with God's love in a positive way, we come under the control of Yoga Maya, or the Daivi Shakti, the spiritual energy, where everything simply facilitates deeper, ever-increasing experiences of feeling Krishna's love and loving Krishna. Through limitless ways, but the Bahiranga Shakti, or the Maya Shakti, when we come under that control, these three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, keep us in a state of forgetfulness. Krishna tells in Gita, Daivi Heshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratiya, that this material energy consisting of the three modes of nature, it's Krishna's energy. It's all powerful. It's beyond our intelligence. It's beyond our ability to control our mind and senses. Time, the controlling factor of God's presence within this world, destroys everything. From the perspective of eternal time, it's just a matter of seconds till the sun turns to ashes. Every ocean is dried up. The Earth planet and every other planet becomes powder. And what to speak of our little lifetimes? How long do we live? We're getting old, we're getting a disease, we're dying. It's the nature of the body. So Maya is very, very strong. But if we take shelter of Krishna, if we recognize that we're completely dependent on Krishna, and that's not a fearless, and nothing in this world can impede our happiness, because we know we are connected to Krishna, the source of all happiness. So this conception that ultimately God is formless and you are formless, God's form is illusion. God's pastimes are illusion. God's name, everyone who reads the scriptures knows it's the Yuga Dharma for this age. Hadirnama, Hadirnama, Hadirnama Eva Kela. In the Kali Santarana Upanishad, it describes these 16 words, 32-syllable mantra, the Maha Mantra. There is no greater medicine to cure us of the ignorance and illusion in this age of Kali than the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in this sense, anybody who knows Shastras understands this. But the Mayavad conception is just like you take a thorn out of your foot with another thorn, and then you throw both thorns away and you walk away. Yes? So similarly, the name of God, the pastimes of God, the deity of God, they are pure goodness. But still, they're manifestations within Maya. And they could free us from Maya, but then after we're free from Maya and we realize our liberated state, we don't need these things anymore. But for great bhaktas like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ballabhacharya, these great saints and avatars and the scriptures themselves, such an idea breaks their hearts. God's name is not different than God. Hanumanji was constantly chanting Ram's names. He was constantly serving Ram. And when he was offered any benediction, the only thing he wanted, let me always remember you, eternally chant your names, and eternally serve you. Little Prahlad Maharaj, he would offer any benediction. Let me always remember you as your servant. This material world is not an illusion, because it's God's energy. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. If we understand the absolute truth is absolute, then God's energy is not an illusion. God's energy is divine. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Daivihi Shugunamayi Mamamaya Duratyaya. Daivi means eternal. Daivi means transcendental. He says, this material energy, this divine energy of mine consisting of the three modes of nature. Prakriti is Krishna's energy. Everything, all the manifestations within it are ever changing. But the principle of Prakriti, the energy, is eternal. So devotees don't say that all that you're seeing is not real. It's not. It's an illusion. The misconception of how we identify it is an illusion. An example, our own bodies. Now, according to Mayavad conception, this body is an illusion. And ultimately the jiva, the atma, is an illusion. The Vaishnava philosophy is the atma is eternal. And this body may be temporary, but it's made of God's energy, for therefore it's real. The illusion is when the atma identifies, I am this body. That's Maya. Maya isn't that matter exists. Maya is when we identify ourselves as being matter. And under that misconception, thinking, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor. That's an illusion. And that's the source of all suffering. To understand the sacredness of the world is possible when we learn how to utilize this energy in Krishna's service. Transformation of material into spiritual is bhakti. And that's done simply through consciousness, to seeing the potential within everything and everyone. So Sripad Madhvacharya, he was really strong. And he was quite athletic. He was Bhima. He was an expansion of Hanuman. When we were at Kishkindha Kshetra, when Hanuman was jumping across the ocean, he understood that this body of his is an instrument by which he can do wonderful things for Ram. With that body of his, he presented the ring of Ram to Sita and brought her the greatest joy. She was in such desperate separation from Krishna, from Sri Ramchandra. Hanuman saw her weeping, crying, just crying out in Ram's name. And with his hand, he presented her Ram's ring. She took that ring and she pressed it to her heart. She experienced Ram in that ring. And she cried in happiness. So for Hanuman, this is what the body's for. Utilizing his body as an instrument of devotion made Sita so happy. And then Sita gave Hanumanji her jewel. And Hanuman jumped over the ocean and went to Malyavanta, the Prashravan mountain in Kishkindha, and presented that jewel to Ram. He pressed it to his heart and cried in ecstasy. He was talking to the jewel. Sita, you have come to me. I'm remembering you. I'm coming, Sita. I'm coming soon. So when we use our body for the pleasure of the Lord, how can we say it's an illusion? How can we say it's unreal? It's something beautiful. Even this body may be temporary. The soul is eternal. And while it's in this body, the human form of life could be a very sacred boat to take us across this ocean of material existence and give pleasure to Krishna. Prasad. Prasad is ordinary food. But when it's offered with love and devotion to Krishna, it becomes his mercy. It becomes very special. It's spiritual. We don't walk over it. We don't disrespect it, because we appreciate its spiritual reality and the truth within it. So the world is real. But the misconception of the eternal soul identifying itself, we are not the body, we are in the body. The body is not meant for our enjoyment, the body is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. That's the highest truth. The misconception is Maya. We were speaking yesterday how Sripad Madhvacharya, he took sannyas when he was about 10 years old. Because he was really enthusiastic. The tradition often is when you get really old, you get married, you have children, you have grandchildren. After you have children and grandchildren, then they take over all the responsibilities of the family. Then you take vanaprastha and eventually take sannyas just before death. But Sripad Madhvacharya, he had a different conception of sannyas. His idea was, sannyas is not just meant for our own liberation. Because actually the path of bhakti is so powerful that you could be a grihastha, you could be a family person and attain the highest perfection. If you see your home as Krishna's home, if you see your family as Krishna's family, if you see your body as Krishna's body, if you see your occupation as a means of facilitating Krishna's service, and we chant the holy name, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he had over 10 children and a wife and several houses and a job. And yet the greatest renunciates, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and others, were coming to get his blessings and learn what are the highest truths from him. Grihe tako vanne tako sada hari bole tako suke duke bolo na ko varane hari nam korore gai gora madhu sware. Little Prahlad became a grihastha. Dhruva Maharaj became a grihastha. They were married. Ambarish Maharaj was married. Durvas Muni was a renunciate. And who was had a deeper connection? Ambarish. He wasn't only married, he was a king. Ranti Dev. What was his renunciation? But he had a wife and children. Kunti Devi, she was a mother with children. So many of the greatest personalities. So the path of bhakti is so strong, you don't have to become a sannyasi, you don't have to renounce. You can attain the highest perfection and live in the highest perfection just by living in that spirit of devotion. Sripad Madhvacharya took sannyas out of deep compassion. Because he wanted to clarify the prevailing misconceptions of who God is and establish principles that actually open the doors to real love and real devotion. And he wanted to give his entire energy for that purpose. And for that, he considered sannyas to be favorable. He had nothing else to do, no other obligation to anything or anyone except to spread the glories of pure devotional service. And he had that determination at the age of 10. Soon after that, he went on a tour of South India. And many historical records describe his incredible accomplishments. This little boy, Achyuta Preksha, his guru came with him for some of the way also, and they traveled, and he was giving lectures. He taught Shripad Madhvacharya that achar and bichar are necessary to be harmonized to actually gain the grace of God and realization. To receive knowledge and to give knowledge, philosophy, is very important. It's essential. But the character and how we live and how we speak and how we interact with other living beings, of how we interact with nature, and how we interact with God within our heart, is all important. Krishna tells in Gita, jnana and vijnana. There's two types of knowledge. There's theoretical and there's realized. Theoretical knowledge we could learn in books, or we could understand by hearing classes, katas. But when we apply those teachings to our life and live with true character of selfless devotion, morality, humility, gratitude, compassion, self-control, when we live with these principles on the basis of that philosophy, we get realization. He explained that the conduct in which we live and the philosophy that we live by are like the two wings of a bird. Did you ever see a bird flying with one wing? Most people these days don't have any wings, so they can't fly very much. And if we just have moral high character without a philosophy of understanding our eternal connection with the Supreme Lord, it's like having one wing. We don't really get anywhere spiritually. And if we have all this high philosophy and we understand and we memorize, even if we memorize every little detail of the highest rasas going on in the spiritual world, if we don't live with humility and compassion and self-control, and we're not really in a spirit of servant of the servant of the servant, it's just one wing. Doesn't get you anywhere. So he wanted to teach people how to fly back home, back to Godhead. And his body was very strong too. When he was in Goa, he was given 4,000 gigantic bananas to eat and 30 pitchers of milk. And within a few minutes, he ate it all. And he didn't get fat. He didn't even have to lay on his left side. He didn't have indigestion. He just... We cannot imitate. But he was showing that his body, one time, he had about 30 disciples This is when he was very old, and they were young. And they seemed to be kind of proud of being young. So he challenged them all to a wrestling match, simultaneous. And within seconds, he defeated all 30 of them. Now, brahmacharis, you don't try to imitate this. But he had a philosophical import to everything he did. That he saw his body is, he was traveling around, he was walking to the Himalayas, he was walking to Kanyakumari, to Badrikashram, he was going all over the place with his body. He was going places no human being could ever go. So he was keeping his body fit to receive blessings and to give blessings. He was completely on the spiritual platform. Then he decided, because Achyuta Preksha, his sannyas guru, he was still very, very influenced, even though he was a devotee, he was very influenced by all of this, you know, Brahman is the all-pervading, formless, qualityless, absolute, and the world is an illusion. It was just, it's so simple to understand it properly. But when you don't have the association of someone like Srila Prabhupada, who's just telling it as it is, can really get confused. And when everybody around is like that, he was quite confused himself. And what was most confusing is traditionally the acharyas accept that any system of true spirituality has to be supported by a commentary of the Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. And everyone was reading the Sarira Bhashya. So Achyuta Preksha told Madhvacharya that we need, if you really want to convince me and you really want to convince others, you have to have a commentary of the Vedanta Sutra to establish this principle. Madhvacharya was such a humble person. Although he was Vayudev, his divine incarnation of God's intimate devotee, Mukhya Pran, by his example and by his own heart, he wanted to get the teachings and the blessings of Vyasadeva. Because the Brahma Sutra was written by Vyasadeva. The four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Itihastas, the Mahabharata, the Samhitas. Vyasadeva helped to bring these all together, to compile them. And then he took the essence of summary and put it into the Vedanta Sutras. Then we read in Srimad Bhagavatam how even after he did all that, he was still unsatisfied. And that's when Narada Muni came to him in Badrikashram and told him to write his own commentary of the Vedanta Sutra, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we accept the Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate authority because it is the commentary of the essence of all Vedas by the person who wrote all the Vedas and the essence of all the Vedas. But at that time, to have a commentary of Vedanta Sutra was the stamp that gave you authority. But it really had to be convincing. So Madhvacharya decided he was going to personally go to meet Vyasadeva and Lord Narayan. And he knew where they lived, because the scriptures tell he lives in Badrinath. But there's two Badris. There's the Badri that humans can go to, and then there's another Badri way, 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 way high, high into a celestial area of the Himalayas that no human can reach. So he told Satyatirtha, one of his intimate disciples, and some others, let us go to Badri. And from Udupi, they walked. Incredible things happened on the way. Eventually, they went to Badri. Please raise your hand if you have been to Badrinath. Raise both your hands and say Hari Bol. So there is the temple of Badri Vishal. It's on the banks of the Alaknanda River. In olden days, just one or two generations back, there was only one way to go there, and that was to walk. And for most people, they went to Badrinath when they were about to die. Because usually if you walked there, you never came back, because you went through jungles and everything. But in Kali Yuga, so many things happen. What happened is China, we have some really wonderful Chinese devotees here, so all respects to China. But back in the 50s and 60s, there was some tension between India and China. And China's at the border of India, so they wanted to have military troops. So they built roads, and there's military stations near Badrinath, just to be near the... So now, because of the military roads, we can drive to Badrinath. But in those days, this is about 750 years ago, Madhvacharya walked. And he was a fast walker. He was Vayuputra. And they went all the way through the jungles and the Himalayan peaks and reached Badrinath. And Madhvacharya, he went there to request the blessings and the empowerment to write a bhasya, a commentary on the Brahma Sutras. But he wanted to offer something also. So he personally wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, the Gita Bhashyam. And he presented that to the deity of Badri Vishal, Badri Narayan, and offered it through Badri Narayan to Vyasadeva and to Lord Narayan. Because his spirit was, I'm coming to ask for service, but I should offer something also. He fasted and he performed some tapasya while he was there for some days. And then he heard a voice, and some of his devotees heard it. Vyasadeva was calling him to the upper Badrinath, where no one can go. So Madhvacharya said, I'm going to the highest peaks on the transcendental plains of the Himalayas, where no human can go, but I'm going. And his devotees were really worried. We may never see you again. Let us come with you. He said, no, you cannot come with me. But Satyatirtha came with him anyway. And Madhvacharya was walking. He was walking through the snow up these high, high mountains. He was walking fast, but he kind of was he was slowing down because Satyatirtha was running and running, and he was eventually he couldn't breathe, and he was falling in the snow, and he was completely exhausted, and he couldn't take another step. And he's just looking up ahead, and he's seeing his guru just enthusiastically moving forward. So Madhvacharya turned back to Satyatirtha and smiled. And with one wave of his hand, he went like this. And instantly, Satyatirtha was back at the lower Badrinath with all of his god brothers. He just was there. It's not that he flew, he just was there. And he was telling all his god brothers what our Gurudev is doing, Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya then, he didn't have to slow down for anyone. He just walked and walked and walked, like Hanumanji. And ultimately, he came to a place after walking for days through total snow wilderness. Nothing. And he came to the spiritual world. Within these highest peaks of Himalayas was a transcendental world. You can't even see it unless you're given the eyes to see. There were lakes and beautiful trees, especially Badari trees. And there were hundreds and hundreds of completely enlightened yogis and rishis. And they're all sitting around Vyasadeva. And he was brought to meet Vyasadeva, who he accepted as his own guru. He offered his prostrated obeisances, and Vyasadeva was so pleased to see Madhvacharya. His determination, his love, his devotion, his compassion. He lifted up Madhvacharya and embraced him. And for many days, Madhvacharya sat at the feet of Vedavyas to hear from him. Then Vyasadeva said, "Let us go to see Lord Narayan, who's also living here." And he took him even higher up, where the three of them, Vyasadeva, Narayan, and Madhva, sat together. And Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lives there in his abode, along with Vyasadeva, they explained to Sripad Madhvacharya the true essence of the Brahma Sutras. And not only explained, empowered, but instructed him to write his commentary. Then Vyasadeva brought him down to the other rishis, and after taking leave, he came down to the lower area of Badrinath and met his disciples and told them everything that happened. And it was there in Badrinath, in the little village where the temple is, that he recited his commentary of the Brahma Sutras. In Satyatirtha, he wrote everything down on palm leaves. In those days, there was no computers. There wasn't even papers and pens. He had to carve them in palm leaves. But he did it with such efficiency because he had such a desire to please his guru. It was in Badrinath, it is said, that Vedavyas, he spoke Mahabharata to Ganesh. And Ganesh wrote everything down without ever asking, "What did you say?" That was his enthusiasm. So in a similar way, Madhvacharya wrote his Purna Pragya Bhasya by speaking it to Satyatirtha. When it was written, they left Badrinath and began to travel to the southern parts of India. They traveled to many places. But one of the very historical events that happened is there was a area on the banks of the Godavari River where the greatest scholars in the whole country would meet. Sometimes they would have debates, sometimes they would just try to deeply discuss scriptures and philosophies. Madhvacharya went there and he spoke and he convinced people so much. The president of the whole association, the most respected scholar practically in the whole land of India, his name was Shobhana Bhatt. He listened to Madhvacharya. He spoke to him. He had questions for him. He had challenges for him. It was so convincing. And what was most convincing is the humility, the intelligence, the compassion, and the character of Madhvacharya. It deeply impressed him. This person is an acharya. He's not just speaking an incredible philosophy that answers all questions, but he lives it. There's one beautiful tape where Srila Prabhupada says that philosophy without good character is practically useless. Shobhana Bhatta, he was a philosopher. Here in Madhvacharya, he found a superior philosophy, an inclusive, comprehensive philosophy that was spoken by a person who, because he had love for Krishna, for Narayan, he had deep, genuine, selfless compassion for every living being. But because he was like the king of all scholars, he really needed, in order for him to be transformed, he needed something very substantial to put his faith in. Sripad Madhvacharya had his Bhasya, his commentary of the Brahma Sutras. And he gave it to Shobhana Bhatta to read and discussed it with him. And after seeing this, Shobhana Bhatta decided he's going to dedicate the rest of his life to expounding the teachings of Sripad Madhvacharya, to propound that the highest perfection of life is pure, unalloyed devotional service to the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, knowing that we are eternally loving servants of the Lord. And through loving service, we can make that connection. Srila Prabhupada explained it in a very simple way. He said, in bhakti, the goal, the sadhya and the sadhana are the same. The goal and the way to achieve it. The way to achieve the highest goal, Krishna tells, bhaktya tvananya yashakya aham evam vidurarjuna. Only by pure bhakti can I be known as I am. And the goal we achieve by loving service is loving service. We practice loving service to become purified, and in the pure state, beyond loving service cleanses us of our egos and our selfishness. It's the most powerful thing in all of creation because it attracts Krishna's grace. And when we become cleansed, then we serve with ecstatic love. We become an instrument of Krishna's ecstatic love in everything we do. And there's no greater joy than that forever. When Shobhanabhata understood this, he was so respected that anywhere he went, he was the keynote speaker, as we would say today. Any school he went to, they would say, yes, you teach us. Any scholarly debate, he would be given the first right in the highest position because he was so accomplished. And now, with all of that incredible facility he had, with deep compassion as an instrument of Madhvacharya's grace, he was teaching pure devotional service. Incredible. The impact that one man had. And later on, he took sannyas from Madhvacharya. And his name was Padmanabh Tirtha. When Shripad Madhvacharya returned to Udupi, Achyuta Preksha, his sannyas guru, was so happy to see him after so long separation. And Madhvacharya presented him his commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. That's, in those days, that was the seal that you really have an authorized school to teach from. And when Achyuta Preksha read it and asked his questions to Shripad Madhvacharya, he was totally convinced. All of his misconceptions, all of his impersonalistic tendencies, they were gone forever. Philosophically, logically, scripturally, experientially, and through realization, he had realized the topmost spiritual state of love for God. When Shripad Madhvacharya was on his way back, actually, when he was in Udupi. How many of you went to Udupi Krishna Temple? Please, if you went and you had nice experience, say Hari Bol very loudly. Much louder, please. One more time. Thank you, thank you. One day, Shripad Madhvacharya was sitting on the ocean side. The area is called Malpe, the Arabian Sea. And he was composing beautiful prayers in glorification of Krishna. And as he was composing those prayers, there was a storm, a heavy windstorm. And because of that, the waves became extremely violent. There was a boat of a merchant who was coming from Dwarka. And he put so much of his life savings into the goods that he was carrying on this boat that he was taking south to sell. But the storm was so turbulent that his boat was sinking, and waves were crashing against him, and winds were smashing him. He was helpless. Not only was his boat going to sink, and all his wealth was going to be destroyed, but he was going to die along with it. So he was helpless. Srila Prabhupada, in one place, he said, when he was in the Jaladuta, which is a cargo ship, sailing across the Arabian Sea, the same sea, and there was some storms, and there was waves, and that's when he had heart attacks. Prabhupada said he looked around and all there was the rain and the winds and the turbulent sea with the waves getting bigger and bigger. And he said his boat felt like a little tiny matchbox in the middle of the ocean. You really can understand the need for higher powers in a situation like that. And he just gave his heart to Krishna. So this boatman, he was about to die and lose everything. And right at the last moment, he happened to see Madhvacharya sitting in meditation on the seashore. And he cried out because he saw this. He's a yogi. He's a saint. Maybe he could help me. He was taking shelter. You see, when you take shelter of saintly people, you're actually receptive to receive their mercy. You can ask for blessings. You can demand blessings, but you're not going to get much. But if you actually feel dependent and take shelter and understand the importance of the association of saintly people, then we're really receptive to receive the words they speak and the blessings that they can transform us with. So this person saw the beautiful form of Sripad Madhvacharya, and he was in such a helpless state. He was crying out for Madhvacharya, help! Madhvacharya had a saffron chador on, just some cloth he was wearing, copan, and he took that cloth and he just waved it. And the storm disappeared. Not only that, the ocean became calm. And then Sripad Madhvacharya just kind of went like this, and the wind took his boat to the shore, and everything was fine. So this person had full realization that this yogi saved his life, saved his wealth, saved everything. And he came down with real deep gratitude and bowed down to Sripad Madhvacharya and said, I have so much wealth on this boat, I'll give you anything you want. What can I give you? I'll give you the whole boat. Sripad Madhvacharya said, I don't want anything. What do I need? Devotees who have Krishna in their hearts are Atmarama. They're self-satisfied. If you're not satisfied with Krishna in your heart, no matter what you have, you'll never be satisfied. He said, I don't want anything. But the person really wanted to. He said, I have gold, I have pots, I have the boat, anything I'll give you. Madhvacharya said, you're coming from Dwarka? He said, yes. He said, do you have any gopi chandan? Gopi chandan is clay. Especially in those days, that clay was so easy to get in Dwarka. It's for free. You just you know, there's just places with clay. You just pick it up and blocks of clay. And sailors, in order to balance their ship, they would have the Gopi Chandan, because it really didn't cost anything. It was more or less, from a material side, it was so easily available, it had no value. But when you take things off your ship, you have to balance it with something else, so they would keep big mounds of Gopi Chandan. Now for a devotee, Gopi Chandan is what you, it's, if you go to Dwaraka, there's a place called Gopi Talab. How many have been there? Please raise your hands and say Hari Bol. We should go on another yatra there. And that's the place where actually gopis came and bathed, and Sri Radharani and Krishna and gopis bathed there in this Gopi Talab, this kund. And the dust from Krishna and Sri Radha's bodies and the dust of the feet of all of the gopis became that clay. So from that time, it's considered priceless. From a business person's perspective in those days, it was worth nothing. But for Madhvacharya, it was worth everything. It's the dust of the feet of Krishna and Radha and gopis. And we put it on our bodies. It's called tilak. We put it on our foreheads, 12 parts of our body. And it's a way of consecrating our body, mind, words, and life to Krishna. So he said, please give me, you have some Gopi Chandan? He said, yes, I have 2 mounds of Gopi Chandan. So he said, you can give me that. And they took the 2 mounds of Gopi Chandan out. And one of the mounds broke open, and inside was an incredible deity of Balaram. And then Madhvacharya, he was chanting beautiful hymns and mantras, and the other lump of Gopi Chandan opened up, and there was a deity of Krishna. Incredible deity of Krishna. And Madhvacharya knew the history of that deity. During the time of Krishna, which was approximately 5,000 years ago, Krishna lived in Dwarka with Devaki and Vasudev, his mother and father. And he lived in beautiful palaces with queens like Satyabhama and Rukmini, Jambavati. Krishna lived approximately 10 to 11 years in Vrindavan. And then Akrura brought Krishna to Mathura. And we spoke about this story in the Srimad Bhagavatam class in Radha Gopinath Champo a couple weeks ago, where Kaliyavana, who was an incredible Yavana demon with millions of soldiers, 30 million, they attacked Dwarka Mathura on one side. And then Jarasandha was coming with millions of soldiers, all these Akshohini divisions, and he was coming attacking Mathura on the other side. So Krishna and Balaram went out to meet Kaliyavana, and in order to protect the citizens of Mathura, he empowered Vishwakarma to build a fort in the sea called Dwarka. Now, I think the day after tomorrow, our yatra is complete. It's the beginning of the yatra, actually, the second part of the yatra. But then you all have to return to your homes, maybe by train or plane or bus or rickshaw. Now, when Krishna wants to move you, it's very special. The people of Mathura, the whole Yadu dynasty, they were in their palaces in Mathura, their homes, and they all went to sleep one night peacefully. So Krishna, he transferred them all to Dwarka, and nobody even woke up. In the morning they woke up, and they're in a brand new palace in Dwarka. They're looking around. Incredible. So that's how Dwarka was created by Krishna. But Devaki, who was Krishna's mother in Mathura, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, he was within her womb when she was living in the prison of Kamsa. The Janmashtami Leela. And then that very night, Vasudev took him across the Yamuna River to Gokul, where he was raised by Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. Devaki expressed to Krishna in the inner chambers of their palace in Dwarka that I've heard so many beautiful leelas or stories about your charming childhood activities in Vrindavan. Yashoda Mai, as your mother, she was a witness. She could be a part of those childhood activities. I heard stories where you would just be a naughty little boy and you'd steal butter and you'd completely conquer everyone's hearts. By the time you came back, you were a prince. I want to see those pastimes that as your mother, I never saw you as a little child. So Krishna to fulfill Devaki's desires, he manifested himself as Bal Gopal, little Krishna. And he jumped on her lap and drank her milk. And then he went and he started breaking butter pots. He was stealing, he was doing all his little childhood pastimes. He was holding a stick and a rope for churning butter as he was stealing. And Devaki was completely mesmerized. She was thinking in her heart, I've never experienced such happiness as this. Your Vrindavan Leela. Rukmini, Krishna's queen, was watching. And she never experienced such happiness as seeing Krishna's Bal Leela of Vrindavan. She requested Krishna, I want to worship you in this form of Bal Gopal stealing butter. Can you give me a murti that I could worship? So Krishna called Vishwakarma to carve that identical form that Rukmini was seeing of Krishna of Vrindavan as the butter thief. And he carved out of a pure Shalagram Shila that form of Krishna. And in one hand he's holding a stick and in the other in a rope. And Rukmini Devi, although she was personally serving Dwarkadish Krishna day and night, her greatest happiness was in worshiping this deity form in the temple, in her inner room of Gopal. Years later, when the Yadu dynasty was sent back to the spiritual world. Arjuna, Krishna's dearest friend, he brought the deity of Rukmini after Rukmini had already left and put it in Rukmini's garden. And over the years, that deity of Gopal that was worshipped by Rukmini and Dwarka was covered by Gopi Chandan, along with the deity of Balaram, and was completely lost. So those sailors, they didn't know there was anything inside of that clump of Gopi Chandan. It was just mud, clay. But it was Krishna's wish and Balaram's wish to come here to Udupi to be worshipped by Sri Padmadvacharya. And later to be visited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even then, when Udupi Krishna was on that boat in that storm, he knew that all of us would be here today. The devotees, Sri Padmadvacharya said, let us bring, Balaram is installed in a temple close to where the sea is. Did you all go to see the Balaram temple? But he wanted to bring Krishna back to the town of Udupi. But Krishna was so heavy, nobody could pick him up. 30 of his disciples tried to lift him, but they could not lift him. Then Madhvacharya, chanting beautiful songs in glorification of Lord Krishna, effortlessly picked Krishna. And as he was carrying Krishna back to Udupi, he completed his beautiful prayers, the Dvadasa Stotram, which for many followers in the Srimad-Bhacharya Sampradaya, even almost 800 years later, chant every day. We can see an analogy in this story too. That merchant who was on the ship, it's like the Jivatma. And the boat is like the human form of life. And the Arabian Sea, the ocean, is like the ocean of samsara. And the purpose of the human form of life is to take the Jivatma across the ocean of samsara to the abode of Krishna. That storm is like the attraction of the senses for their objects. Lust, envy, anger, arrogance, greed, illusion. All of these human frailties. We want to be the controller. We want to be the proprietor. We want to be the enjoyer. And there's so many distractions. Mental distraction is desire for recognition, prestige, adoration. And then there's the senses that want to feel something, touch something, taste something, hear something, smell something, see something, just enjoy. Have you ever had that experience? That's like the storm. And that storm, if we get too attached to the attraction between the mind and the senses for the objects of this world, we sink. We sink in the storm in the ocean of samsara. And in that sinking, we take birth after birth after birth again. But Madhvacharya, in this case, he's the grace of God which comes through the grace of Guru, the grace of Vaishnavas, the grace of holy scriptures. And like the man on that boat, when the jiva really realizes his helpless condition in this ocean of material existence, and really understands how helpless we are in these storms of the temptations and aversions of Maya, we cry out, we take shelter. And when we do, by the grace of the Lord, he helps us. And one of the first ways he helps us is he teaches us what's really of value. The man's wealth, everything else, Madhvacharya didn't give much value to that. But Gopi Chandan, that had value. What is Gopi Chandan? We put the tilak of Gopi Chandan in our bodies to represent a Vaishnav lifestyle. The Gopi Chandan represents the character, the aspiration, the sadhana, living a life of a Vaishnava. So the grace of Guru and the grace of God is they give us this type of life to live. To live as servant of the servant, to live with morality for Krishna's pleasure. To live as an instrument of compassion for Krishna's pleasure. Yogi namapi sarvesha madgatena antaratmana. Krishna tells of all yogis, one who abides in me with great faith is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So to actually receive, when we ask Srila Prabhupada, what can we do to repay you for all you've given us? He said, just sincerely accept this path of devotional service and share it with others. That's the life of a devotee. Gopi Chandan represents when we get the grace of Guru, we receive what he gives us. A life of service, a life of purification. And through that grace, Krishna appears. Sripad Madhvacharya brought Krishna to Madhva Sarovar, and bathed Krishna with his disciples, and then performed a beautiful ceremony to install him where we see him today in this beautiful temple. The temple was built a little later, but he was installed there, and Sripad Madhvacharya personally established the form of worship. And Krishna was so beautiful, so sweet, so merciful. And because of Madhvacharya and his followers, because of the way they worshipped him, people by the millions started coming to Udupi to have the darshan of Sri Krishna. Madhvacharya wanted to go back to Badrinath to offer his gratitude to Vyasadeva, his guru, for all that he had given him. And he wanted to present to him the Purna Pragya Bhasya, the commentary of Vedanta Sutra that he wrote under his instructions. So along with several of his then sannyasis and other disciples, they began their journey from Udupi back to Badrikashram. And the biographers of Shripad Madhvacharya tells many incredible stories about what happened on the way. Can I tell just a few? There was a king. His name was Ishwaradev. And the problem is he really thought he was Ishwaradev. That's the fundamental basic problem with life, is we want to be the master and the enjoyer. And ultimately we want to just be God. Then we have no competitors. But for a devotee, Krishna, Ram, so beautiful, so merciful, we just want to glorify them and love them and chant their holy names. King Ishwaradev, he was a thief. He was arrogant. He wanted to exploit people. Everything was just about him. So he wanted to build some lakes for his own satisfaction. And anybody he would see, he had his armies, he would force those people to dig the lake and not pay him anything. So here's Madhvacharya with his sannyasi disciples and others. They're walking. And the soldiers come. And they have no respect. They tell Madhvacharya, you have to dig the lake. Otherwise the king will punish you. So Shripad Madhvacharya meets the king. And the king has a spade, shovel. Says, I don't care who you are, dig the lake. Madhvacharya, he said, I'm a swami. I don't know how to dig lakes. You show me how to dig, then I'll dig. He said, you just take it like this. He said, just show me how you do it. So the king started digging. And the king got so illusioned, he got so mystified by Shripad Madhvacharya, he got so totally immersed in digging that he forgot about everything, and Madhvacharya and his followers just walked away. Another time, because in those days, India was so many little kingdoms. There was a Turkish king who really hated Hindus and was really he was also a very cruel person. So he had armies, and they came to the river Ganges, the Ganga, and they stopped any boats from crossing the Ganga. It was a wide river, very forceful river. Now to get to the Ganga, you have to cross to get to Badrinath, you have to cross the Ganga there. So there were no boats. And on the other side, there were armies who were going to kill anybody who tries to get into their territory. So what are you going to do? Shripad Madhvacharya told his sadhu disciples, stand in a line, one after another, single file, hold each other's hands. So they were on the shore of the river, holding each other's hands, and then he went right into the front and he held the hand of the first person, the first Swamiji, and he started walking into the Ganges, and he was pulling all of them, and they crossed it. The biographers, I haven't found where it says whether like Vasudev and Krishna, where it just kind of opened up for him, or whether they walked over the water. Somehow they crossed it. You see, Vasudev, when he crossed the Yamuna, Krishna was in his hands. With Madhvacharya, Krishna was in his heart. But as soon as they came to the other side, the armies were there with weapons. ready to imprison them, torture them, or kill them. So Madhvacharya said, I want to meet your king. The king didn't speak Hindi. He spoke Turkish. He had Turkish soldiers. He was an invader. So Sripad Madhvacharya came before him and spoke eloquent Turkish language. Nobody knew he knew Turkish. And he spoke with such compassion and such intelligence and even such respect for this person, even though the soldiers were about to kill them, the king, he was charmed. He told Madhvacharya, I'm just so happy to meet you. I'm so enlightened to meet you. I want to donate to you some really nice land where you can like do whatever you could live. So Madhvacharya, he didn't want any land. The king touched his feet and asked for his blessings. And they continued their journey. When they got near Badrik Ashram, they were going through a forest. And Satyatirtha, who was the person who would, he was such a faithful, devoted disciple. He would do anything for his guru. And he was the one empowered to write down the books as Sripad Madhvacharya would dictate. But Satyatirtha was alone in this area in the forest, and suddenly a gigantic tiger attacked him. And nobody was around. So he thought of Krishna. This is the end. And suddenly Sripad Madhvacharya appeared right there. And with one touch of the head of the tiger fell unconscious. The moral of the story is there are many tigers in this world. But if we take shelter of the Vaishnavas who hold Krishna in their hearts, we can be rescued from those tigers within and without. Sripad Madhvacharya, he presented his Gita Bhashyam, his commentary of Bhagavad Gita, to the deity of Badri Vishal in the lower part of Badrinath. But the Bhashyam of the Vedanta Sutra, he wanted to directly present to Vyasadeva and Lord Narayan. So he told his devotees he's going to the upper Badri again. And nobody even attempted to come with him. And he was really enthusiastic. And he went like Hanumanji to the spiritual world. And there he bowed down to Vyasadeva, who brought him to Lord Narayan. And they embraced him. And he presented to them the Purna Pragya Bhasya, the Vaishnav commentary of Brahma Sutras. And they were so pleased because it was their words that he was an instrument to present to the world. At that time, Vyasadeva gave 8 murtis to Sripad Madhvacharya and also gave him an instruction. You should write a summary commentary on the Mahabharata. And with that command, after sitting with his guru and his beloved Lord, he returned to his devotees. When he came down to the Ganga again, in the plains of India. He was with many scholars and many simple, common people. Every type of people, he could attract their hearts with his wisdom, his compassion, his love. And what an incredible philosophy. Some of the people said, you should write commentaries on the Upanishads also. And he did. During the Chaturmasya on the bank of the Ganges, after going to Badrinath for the second time, he wrote Bhashyams or commentaries for 10 of the primary Upanishads. He took his devotees to Kurukshetra. And there he was at Jyotisar. He saw the place where Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, and in doing so spoke to the whole world. And he was remembering his pastimes as Bhima on the Kurukshetra battlefield, which is a major part of the Mahabharata. And some of his devotees asked him, do you remember where you put your weapons after the battle? And Sripad Madhvacharya said, come and follow me. And they walked into these fields of Kurukshetra. And he came to one place and said, dig here. And they dug. And in the earth, they discovered Bhima's club. Now, Bhima was really large in size, and his club was enormous. There was Bhima's club. They were mystified. And then he told them, bury it again, because nobody could pick it up except him. And eventually they returned after an incredible tour of going to so many different lands and so many kingdoms and bestowing so much compassion on so many people. They returned to Udupi. When he was around 79 years old, he told his devotees that when I physically depart from you, my spirit will remain here in Udupi. And my body will go to Badrikashram to live with my beloved Gurudev, Srila Vyasadeva. And in the Anandeshwar temple, he would give his lectures on a regular basis. And on the side of the temple, there's a window. When you look in the window, you see the same seat that Sripad Madhvacharya would give his talks. In the Udupi Krishna temple, there is the seat where he would preach and meet people. And that same seat is where the Paryaya Swamis, his successors, sit even today. It was there when he was speaking the Aitareya Upanishad, was it, or Samhita? He was speaking and his body simply disappeared. And those who were witness to this understood that his spirit is forever here. So we have come to Udupi because it is such a special place for us. In our yatras, we often go to Sri Mayapur Dham, Sri Vrindavan Dham, and we've been to so many other places. We regularly go to Jagannath Puri Dham. Sometimes we go to Ayodhya or Naimasharanya, Badrinath, Gangotri, Yamunotri, Pandrapur, Rangakshetra, Tirupati, Kurumakshetra, Singhachalam, Ahovalam, Kanchipuram, Rameshwaram, Chitrakoot. We've had many yatras. The idea of a yatra is we come together. We put everything in the world aside and we're just pilgrims. We're among people who have one purpose. This is oneness. Although there's 4,500 of us individuals with different bodies and different backgrounds, we have one purpose: to help each other to love Krishna, to help each other to serve Srila Prabhupada and please Srila Prabhupada by pleasing the Vaishnavas, by taking shelter of the holy names. And these holy places are very, very special. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, he bathed in Pampa Srovar and visited Kishkindakshetra. And sometime after that, he came to Udupi. And he had darshan of beautiful Bal Gopal, Udupi Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was seeing his beloved Krishna. And here in Udupi, he personally, in the great ecstasy of compassion, he led the kirtan of the holy name. He danced and chanted. Our beloved Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, he opened the doors to all these holy places for us. I'm coming from the Western world, and there are many hundreds of people coming from various countries of the West, Middle East, Far East. But it's interesting, in my 44 years of being in India, that's when I first came, most Indians don't really know what Vrindavan or Udupi or Kishkindakshetra are either. They've heard of them, but to actually understand, who is this Krishna? What is the real gifts of Sripad Madhvacharya? Why did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come here? He took the philosophy of Sripad Madhvacharya and the other great Vaishnavacharyas to build a foundation by which he could spread Krishna consciousness to every town and village throughout the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he distilled all these incredible philosophies with the simple principle of achintya bheda bheda tattva. We are inconceivable one in difference to Krishna, the jiva, the jivas for each other, and the jivas with material nature, and every aspect of material nature with each other. Everything is totally personal and intimate on this spiritual platform that facilitates relationships of love. Inconceivable. One divine spiritual energy, one divine source of all energies. But within that oneness, there's inconceivable, indescribable, limitless variegatedness for Krishna to enjoy. and for us to be enjoyed. And by being enjoyed, by experiencing the ultimate happiness. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the gopis, they want nothing for themselves. They don't want any happiness for themselves. They only want Krishna to be happy. But in that, they're experiencing the ultimate happiness. Even more happiness than Krishna. How is that possible? Krishna is the reservoir of all happiness. He's Ram, the reservoir of all pleasure. But yet in the gopis, giving up any desire for their own enjoyment, only for the enjoyment of Krishna, that selfless love accesses such enormous, infinite amounts of Krishna's love that even Krishna wants to taste what the gopis are feeling. I cannot repay you even in a lifetime of Brahma, Krishna tells gopis. That is bhakti. That is prema. It's the nearest thing to us. It's who we are. It's our essence. It's our real potential. Srila Prabhupada gave us the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jeev jago, jeev jago, gora chandra bole. Wake up, sleeping souls. Everything you're looking for is within you. Bhakti is the path of waking up. It's as simple as that. When Sri Chaitanya Madhvacharya, at one point, because he was a wonderful singer, he was an architect, he was an athlete, he was a philosopher, he was a pujari, he was a cook, he was a construction, he was everything. He was expert at everything. Especially his singing was so sweet, it would just so... it would stir the soul of people. And we would sing the glories of Krishna. People's hearts would melt. One time he came to a place and they weren't listening to him. So he asked for some seeds. Some seeds from some rice or something like that, plant. And he put the seeds in his hand and started chanting Krishna's names, these beautiful mantras. And as he was singing, the seeds were sprouting into flowers right in his hands. They weren't like getting roots in his hands, but they were just sprouting. And when people saw that, they decided, we want to hear what you say. So that is the power of this mantra of God's holy names. The seed of love is within us. And when we chant with sincerity, Trinadabhisunichena Taror Ibasihishtana, Amani Namanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, with humility, forgiveness, tolerance, offering respect to others, and not demanding or expecting it ourselves. When we are in this mood of the servant of the servant of the servant, in the association of people who are really aspiring for that perfection, when we chant the holy names, the seed of our love for Krishna sprouts and awakens and bears fruit of praying from within us. Srila Prabhupada gave us this gift in the holy names, in connection to these great acharyas, spiritual teachers, his books, the holy scriptures, and he gave us the gift of each other. Thank you very much.